Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast. Ekasinomics
on Kaya Biz.
You are listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. As mentioned, Ekasinomics. This is where we're going to talk all things about phenomenal innovations that are created by entrepreneurs. Remember growing up, there was this theme of just go to the neighbor's house and ask for a cup of sugar. Ask for just a tablespoon of salt. Well, that's the reality of how neighborly our communities used to be at some point. But beyond that, also just a realistic view of sometimes just how much you needed to get by. Unfortunately, when it comes to most retailers, that's not part of the retail experience. There's pre-packaging for goods that you want to buy. But there are solutions that are being brought to the market to make sure that we as South Africans can go back to the times of old, where if you just need a cup of sugar, 3/4 cup of flour, and quite literally a tablespoon of salt to make your groceries for the day or the week, Smartful Dispensers is now allowing customers to do that, specifically by purchasing from trusted brands, buying the exact quantities that they can afford without the extra cost of packaging. To tell us more, we're joined by Neville Harders. He's the CEO of Smartful. Neville, welcome to the show and thank you so much for your time. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Neville or Nevo?
Neville, but Nev is much easier. Oh. Nice to be here, Gugu. Neville. Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure to have you, and thank you for making time, sir. I guess first things first, I'm hoping that I've adequately explained the concept of Smartful, right? Quite literally, buy exactly what you want with what you have without any additional costs. But share some feedback for those who might not be familiar with Smartful.
Sure, yeah, that's exactly what it is. The idea is to, you know, get rid of the stress of buying in small quantities, which is always more expensive. If you want to buy the small packet or a sachet of washing powder, for example, or, you know, or any like mini meal, it always costs you more in small quantities than it does in big quantities. And Smartful is really born out of the question of why. Why does it have to be that if I'm buying like 100 grams of rice, why is 100 grams of rice in a 500 gram packet so much more expensive than the same 100 grams of rice in a 10 kilogram bag? And by kind of looking at that model and seeing what is happening in the market, we realized that a big part of that cost wasn't actually greed, because that was our first guess. It would be, oh, manufacturers know, brands know they can charge you more for buying small amounts. Mm-hmm. But it was actually the costs and logistics of shipping all these small packets around. So it was the cost of the plastic and extra kind of shipping and all the things that go with it. And by getting rid of that and creating a dispensing unit, like an ATM, mm-hmm, that we put into spaza shops, allowing people to buy for 5 rand or 10 rand, it just simplifies the entire process, and we can achieve a much lower price for consumers than they could if they bought it in a bag.
Mm-hmm. And this makes sense, especially in lower income environments where consumers just need what they need in order to get by. I'm keen to understand, though, what makes Smartful different? I'm aware that there are some peers in the industry, the likes of Qualisa, who have a similar concept within many townships in South Africa. But what makes Smartful different in terms of its access to customers, but also procurement of the products that you have?
Sure. So, I mean, interesting enough, the interesting story is that the initial Qualisa did come from us. We rebranded to Smartful once we started getting market traction in the UK and internationally, and we realized Qualisa was just too South African a name, but it was great for Mike to take it over from us and to carry on with the concept just in South Africa in the manual stores.
Okay.
Our whole process is to look at it in an automated way. So what we have really focused on is how do you make a very low-cost smart dispensing unit that is food safe, that is as reliable as packaging for consumers, that tracks best before date so you can't have any expired goods in it, that can meet all those requirements from a consumer safety perspective, but also meet the logistics requirements of large brands. You know, large brands don't want to sell you small quantities. They can't really deal with even spaza shops. They always go through a DC, like a cash and carry where the spaza shops go and buy. And all of these steps in the value chain create a lot more costs. So what we do is we do direct deals with the brands. So we buy directly from them. We then repackage it into large Tupperwares, effectively. They're called hoppers. They're plastic. They're food safe. You know, we make sure it's all managed correctly. And then those slide into our dispensing units. And once they go into the dispensing unit, we actually read an RFID tag on that dispenser to say, oh, this is mini meal. It best before date is, you know, X. And we know exactly everything about that batch number. So it's completely food safe and it's secure. And when consumers purchase from us, they know they're buying the real product at a good price and that it's always fresh.
Got you. And I think that's so important, right, in terms of, you know, how you maintain the quality of the food, especially in a market like South Africa, where we do see that there's been ongoing concerns around food safety and security, the quality of the produce, and even counterfeit goods now making their way into the market. So maybe let's just emphasize that again in terms of the controls that you highlight to make sure that the health and well-being of customers is something that is prioritized.
Yeah, that is really critical, that to make sure that, you know, we saw what happened in kind of, you know, spaza shops last year with so many people getting sick and the deaths. And we've got to really manage that and make sure that we're meeting the regulatory requirements. That's a critical, critical aspect of delivering these products.
100%. Talk to us then about, you know, the journey in starting this. As I look through your bio, I realize you've had a beautiful career in all things media, technology, private equity and investments. So you've almost worn and walked the journey, you know, right throughout, you know, being someone who has supported businesses, starting a business yourself, growing businesses, leading other organizations themselves. And here you are now at Smartful. What was it like, I guess, in terms of, you know, the business dynamics that you had to go through in building this entity, making it relevant to its respective markets and garnering the necessary support that you need from all stakeholders? Call the groups?
I think that's a great question. And you know, no business journey is a straight line. So you never end up where you think you're going to, where you start, you think you're going to end up, right? It always meanders along as it goes. And the project actually started as a piece of R&D work. So research development work we did for a company called Smolen Group. Mm-hmm. And Smolen Group is a big marketing kind of retail specialist group where they help brands reach consumers, and they, you know, they're mostly known for packing the shelves at Spar and Checkers and all the big retailers for the big brands, for the Unilevers and P&Gs and Tiger brands and so forth. And they actually came to us with a project and said, how would you sell products as a service into low income markets? And so we looked at lots of different ideas to try and solve this. We thought, well, what if we made a washing machine, a laundromat service with a creche? Because creches often don't have any, like a washing machine. They're washing clothes and things for the creche itself by hand.
Yes, got you.
And, you know, if we could, and now there's kids always need laundry. What if we kind of made a laundromat service? And we actually tried that out. We actually did an experiment with a Sky washing powder. We rolled it out in Alex. But that didn't really work. It just didn't have the business viability that we needed to show to show a successful model. You know, we had other ideas like pay toilets in transport centers, especially for women, so you can make sure that they're well stocked and start little small franchise businesses for it that we tried. Mm-hmm. You know, a number of different things. But the one idea we tried, which was originally called Gualisa, was the fill up at spaza shops. And we bought a very basic little machine. And we put it in the spaza shops, in a couple of spaza shops, and you had rice and dishwashing liquid you could buy through it. And what was interesting when we spoke to consumers afterwards, they said, oh, I can fill up from just R2. I can buy food from just R2. And we realized there that, oh, wow, the flexibility of pricing, the ability to give people small quantities of food is really, really critical. Mm. And then as we explored it, all the other things came out, like, oh, brands want this, so it has to have cloud-based reporting so that a brand can tell exactly how many sales they've had. We need to protect against fraud. Then we realized about food regulations, and so it kind of grew. So I think we started that project in 2019, and only now in 2025 are we really kind of letting it go into commercial launch. That's how long it's taken to get this right. And in that time, by the way, we've done projects in Bangladesh with Unilever for shampoos and conditioners. And we've done projects, and we're currently still doing projects in Kenya. Washing powder, exactly. Yeah, sunlight. And we're doing also that in Zambia. So that's our next launch area. And that's all backed, you know, again, as we started doing these projects and we rolled out the first few machines, Unilever heard about us, and we ended up kind of getting funding from Transform, which is a combination of the UK government, Unilever, and Ernst & Young. And that gave us money to really kind of boost ourselves into these markets and help pay for a lot of the R&D that we're doing.
Yeah. What I find so incredible about your business as well, Neville, is not only are there the local case studies, you know, you have AB's Puzzle Shop here in South Africa that you've used as a case study, and a few others are available on your website. But you've also done a lot of work internationally. And I'm glad that you do mention Kenya as well as Bangladesh, because this must give us a very wonderful bird's eye view of the consumer trends in all emerging markets, but such different countries with their own nuances. You know, what have you picked up in terms of your experiences in these particular markets, and what's different for the South African consumer that might not be relevant to those in Kenya or Bangladesh?
Such an interesting question, because you're right. Like, the dynamics, even in low-income, informal markets, are so different between these different consumer markets that it's quite remarkable, and almost the way you approach it is very, very different. South Africa is unique because we're much more community-driven than you'd see in Bangladesh, for example. You know, the community, the locals are far more important here than they are there. You know, Bangladesh, mostly men do the shopping versus women, especially for hair products, which isn't really like South Africa. Kenya is more advanced than us in adoption of technology.
Yes.
So in Kenya, they've had these kind of dispensing units for a while. For milk is a little bit earlier.
Oh, wow.
But they've had a lot of cooking oil, and to the point where some of the larger supermarkets, kind of, you know, informal supermarkets, if you like. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine a combination of a spaza shop the size of a large spa, they will sell 50% of their oil sales, the cooking oil sales will come through these kind of smart dispensing models.
My goodness.
So it really depends. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. And the dynamics, obviously, in South African spaza environment is very different, where we have such a cultural mix here, so much diversity. We have Somalis, Ethiopians, Eritreans, you know, and some local South Africans, but not as many local South African spaza owners as we'd love to see, which is why we made AB the case study, because, you know, it's really nice to see that and to look at a family-owned spaza business that's been going for three generations, and how they're kind of looking to innovate and kind of offer new services to their customers.
100%. What also intrigues me about your journey as well is the partnership that you've had with a few retailers. Spa is one that I do see listed on your website, in South Africa specifically.
Yeah.
This is intriguing, because a while ago it was almost as though local retailers were competing with the spaza shop owners and even independent players like yourselves to say, we want to dominate the market and we'd rather sell goods on our terms using our packaging, pricing and product offering. But talk to us about how that's not necessarily the reality and you've had favorable outcomes with Spa.
So I think it's an interesting spa. It's an interesting story, because we had a great case study with Spa and we really worked with them well. And then the SAP issue happened a few years ago, if you remember.
Yes.
And that really put all new innovations onto the back burner for them. The interesting thing for me, though, is this, is when we first started with Spa, and I'll throw out some numbers, you know, we had four little dispensers doing rice and maize meal. I think we were doing re-coffee and Cremora at a single spa in Timbisa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a busy spa. Like, it is like 6,000 people a day kind of spa. So it's very, very busy. And we were doing around 15,000 rand a month in sales through that. And I can't go into percentages of against their products, but we were doing really well about against their kind of core products and kind of setting significant percentages, often more than what they sell on the shelf through the dispensers in the small quantity bags, which is what we kind of compete against, mm-hmm. right? Nowadays, in a small spa like AB's, we'll do numbers similar to that.
Oh, my goodness. And that's on a small... that says a lot. Small scale, spa, but higher volume.
A lot. Yeah, and higher revenues. And so it's really interesting to see that, you know, how this model has grown. I mean, for me, it's always funny. Like, what we thought was success 2 or 3 years ago, you know, as we were trialing and piloting and testing things, nowadays we look at that and go, wow, that was a really bad month. And, you know, so you never know what, you know, where you'll go to in these things. So I think while the big retailers, I actually think that they're still very slow, the big retailers, they still see spaza market as a competitor. As a competitor, because 40% of South Africa's, you know, kind of trade, basic household trade goes through spaza stores. So I still think there's a little bit of competitive energy there, though I see a rapid change. And I'm actually putting more money on the spaza shops than on the big retailers right now. I think the spaza shops
really
are going to increase their share of spend versus the retailers.
Is this the private equity investor in you speaking? I'm teasing.
This is some of that. That is some of my experience there. Yeah, but no, you know what it is. We've always assumed that in spaza trade, people are buying only small bags, right? They're only buying the 2.5 kilograms of maize meal because, you know, but that's not what's happening anymore. Now the 12.5 kilograms of maize meal are available at spaza shops, and that's bulk of what they're selling. So there's been a big shift. There's been a big, big shift in how people are buying from spazas, which I don't think the retailers, and there's actually brands in spazas that don't exist in retailers.
That are unique to South Africa? Yeah, I mean, proudly procured and
yeah, they're unique to South Africa. Yeah. That made manufactured in South Africa, created in South Africa, and then you don't really see them in the big retailers.
That's
interesting.
Yeah, that's quite telling. I'll tell you what, Nev, we definitely need you back on the show for a bigger conversation around the reality around what's happening in spaza shops and just making sure that we enhance the opportunities that also exist for many more entrepreneurs in the ecosystem, because I can imagine opportunities for partners, for suppliers, and of course local spaza shops as well to actively participate in making sure that they distribute goods in a package, in a manner, in the size, in the quantum that is required by their customers. But thank you so much. This has been a refreshing conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Smartful CEO Nevo Hardis joining us this evening to help us unpack the operations of the business. And as you've heard, it really is a business that is making sure that it meets its customers' needs as and where you are, operating right across the globe, delivering refill and reuse solutions in low-income markets. So imagine you just like to have jungle oats for 2 days, right? You go to the dispensary, you know, essentially purchase a small amount and it gets dispensed by the dispensing machine, and you walk out and instead of buying a kilogram or half a kilogram of jungle oats or any other brand, you're able to have the item that you require for the price that you need. Amazing stuff. And of course, it really does speak to the innovations that we need in South Africa.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.